Little Johnny appeared at the back of his mother's kitchen door, knocking, little five-year-old Johnny. And mother came to the door, and there was Johnny. He looked up at mom, and he said, "Who am I?" Well, mother, kind of thinking Johnny's playing one of his games again, chose one of his favorite characters. He said, "Why?" she said, "You're Superman." He says, "Oh, no." The next door lady was right. She said, "Johnny, you're so dirty, not even your mother would recognize you." Questions. Questions fill our entire life. Questions. And there are some questions which are directly answered, and some questions which need pondering. You take a look at the scriptures, we know the scriptures are filled with questions. Sometimes Jesus asking the question, sometimes Jesus is being asked the question. One which Jesus asks immediately to Peter in the post-resurrection narrative is, "Do you love me?" Of course, Peter answers quickly, like a yes or no answer. "Yes, Lord, you know I love you." But all of a sudden, Jesus asks that three times. And he does so because he's building up to the fact that the answer to this question demands an understanding of depth and a commitment. The answer to this question demands an understanding of depth and commitment. He ends by telling Peter what he would sacrifice for answering yes to that statement. There's, of course, a dramatic repartee between Pilate and Jesus when Jesus is brought before Pilate. And he says, "Why did you come?" He says, "I've come to proclaim the truth." And Pilate says, "What is truth?" And Jesus remains silent. Because it's the wrong question. Who is truth? Truth was standing before Pilate, embodied in the person of Jesus. It's not what is truth, who is truth. The perfect revelation of the Father and the Son, whose truth was embodied in the person of Jesus standing before him. You know, it's very interesting when you talk in terms of questions. There are some questions which are proposed, which can be easily answered. You know, easily answered. But there are other questions which need pondering. And still others, which I know the media loves, and I know this very much, and as a reality, those questions are loaded. And what are loaded? What even the term loaded, what do you load? Well, you load a wagon, but I don't think that's what they mean. You load a gun. Meaning loaded, it's pointed, that question is pointed right at you. Meaning it's going to be fired at some time. And it's being fired, why? Because it creates exactly the controversy that's being begged by the question. And here today, obviously, we have one of the most loaded questions that is posed to Jesus in the sacred scripture. Juxtaposing Jesus as a great prophet and one committed to God in the understanding of the Jewish law, and Jesus as a person who finds himself in the position as an individual that's being directed by an occupied authority, the Romans. The Romans, the Jews. And the question being posed is an ability not to find an answer to the dilemma, but to force Jesus into a position that has one or the other side condemning him. One or the other side condemning him. When we take a look at the question that's posed today, we take a look at it two ways. First, the macrocosm. The macrocosm, which is the great understanding, the large understanding, the big view, is the fact of the dual citizenship that all of us have as people who are committed to God and also find ourselves culturally embedded in countries and governments. Are we to suddenly pay those tributes? I know most of us, and you know, you could talk to politicians right away, and one of the things they say immediately is part of their agenda will never be, hey, guess what, everybody, we've got to raise taxes. Immediately they would say, there might be that fraction of people say, well, we need to raise taxes, we need to fulfill our responsibilities and duties as citizens. There might be that fraction of people that might say, well, yes, I will support that individual. But the majority of us don't raise taxes, not if you want to get elected. The Romans were great at taxing. They had a production tax on those individuals who created grain and oil. They had an income tax on individuals in their earning. And then they had a poll tax. And a poll tax came about just because you had reached a certain age and you owed the emperor a tribute. That last one is the one that basically Jesus is talking about, that poll tax. You know, do we pay the poll tax to Caesar? Now, to contextualize it, you have to realize that the Jews are a theocracy. Who is the leader of the kingdom of the Jews? God. You don't acknowledge any other leader. Oh, there might be leaders who kind of guide and direct. There might be the leaders who kind of create the order. But in the mind of the Jew, it's God who is the ultimate leader. God who is the one who demands the ultimate respect. And I have no objection to that whatsoever in the sense of understanding God's dominion over us. But then there's the other aspect of it, is that Jesus finds himself now being occupied by the Romans and finds others being occupied by the Romans. And is there a legitimacy to giving and supporting basically those Romans for whatever they do, creating the roads, creating a sense of peace or tranquility among factions, whatever it is? Is there a legitimacy to that? Government? Religion? Government? Religion? And of course, what does Jesus do? Immediately he says, show me a coin, denarius. And take the denarius out, and on the one side of the denarius, whose image is it? Caesar's. Now remember, no graven image is ever to be given in terms of the response by God. Well, Jesus does not answer the question. He just gives an example. If you've got a coin in your pocket and it's already got the mark of Caesar, then it belongs to Caesar. Turn it over to him. But then he says, but give to God what is God's. In common parlance for us as citizens, we have two citizenships in the macrocosm. We have a dual citizenship. We are citizens of the world, and we are citizens of God and God's kingdom. We have an obligation to fulfill our responsibility as citizens of the world. And I would tell you without hesitancy, everybody here should be a good citizen of our state and of our country. Without a doubt, you should vote. And you should make your vote known. And you should exercise basically that privilege and that right that you have as an American citizen. You should exercise that. You should support good government so that there's a stability of the things that we do. So therefore, you should support Caesar in those things which help and aid us. You should support and aid us. But I tell you without hesitancy that your ultimate allegiance belongs to God. And there isn't a dichotomy in good government. There isn't a dichotomy in those things that serve the dignity of the human person and your faith. There isn't. And why isn't there? Because in serving the dignity of the human person, you serve the common good. You serve the exaltation of the rights that belong to every individual within our community and society. You do that. As a person of faith, you embrace the good. And it's the good that any society seeks to share with all of its citizens. You do that. You know, it's interesting. I saw a story recently that talked about, does one vote make any difference? And the response in terms of the story was, well, when there was a person, a chancellor coming into power in Germany, it was one vote that put Adolf Hitler as leader of Germany. One vote. Imagine what would have happened historically, sometimes all the pain and suffering, if that one vote were cast in a different direction. Does one vote make a difference? Most of us kind of take a look at the hundreds of thousands and millions of votes that are given. What good is mine? What good is yours is a reflection of your attitude of making present your good citizenship and fulfilling your responsibility, not only as a citizen of the country, but in relation to your responsibility, reflecting your voice and your sense of God within the culture. I said there was a macrocosm, but there's also a microcosm. And what's the microcosm? The question that's posed in general, which is trying to trap Jesus, you know, are you pro-Roman or are you pro-Jewish government? Are you pro-Roman or are you for theocracy? Answer, one way or the other, Jesus doesn't. He says, take a look at what you have and what you possess. Give to Caesar what is Caesar's and to God's what is God's. Now, in depth, in looking at that answer that he gives, what belongs to God? Everything. Everything belongs to God. Everything. Even Caesar belongs to God. Everything belongs to God. And now the microcosm. The question that's posed to us is, what do you render God in your own life? What do you render God? Like the question that's posed to Peter, do you love me? Do you love me? Do you know when you answer yes what that means? Do you live it out in your lives? Do you seek to be a witness of that in the world? Do you love me? If the answer is yes, Lord, then we must accept all of the consequences that go with that. Which means that sometimes we're rejected by the culture, which does not embrace our understanding and our sacrificial understanding of our response to our brothers and sisters. We have to accept the fact that we may be isolated, that we may be marginalized. But we accept that in our obedience is a faithfulness to a truth of a God who reveals himself and who we know we cannot ever fulfill the destiny which is meant for us and for our community without being responsible to that question. St. Thomas More was one individual who, placed in conflict with the king and with his faith, with his faithfulness to the church and the king. The king was forcing him to sign something which he could not agree to because he knew the very base was false. And he stood for the truth and he stood before God. Interestingly enough, he maintained his Christianity and Catholicism to the very end. When the executioners was there, even before that, when the judges, when standing before those who were his peers and his judges, knowing that a lie was condemning this man to his death, he said to them, "My friends, I hope that one day we shall be together in heaven. Love your enemies. Do good to those who would harm you." A statement this fact. And then as he looked up to the executioner before he was beheaded, he said, I am a good servant of the king, but God's first. Every one of us in our hearts have to be able to say that. I'm a good citizen. I'm a person who participates in government. And I look to that as my responsibility and embrace it. But God first. And my conscience will reflect that in the choices that I make. And the ultimate choice is to love God. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit.